The Kinky Cocktail Hour is brought to you by Motor Bunny, the world's most powerful saddle-style vibrator that offers fabulous creative sexual experiences. We use it and it rotates, it vibrates, and it delivers mind-blowing orgasms. Enjoy Motor Bunny as your favorite sex toy. When you order the Motor Bunny, multiple attachments are included along with the Link controller, which allows wireless control from anywhere. Motor Bunny is the world's most powerful saddle-style vibrator on Earth. Use the link in the show notes and spice up your sex life with a Motor Bunny. You're listening to Kinky Cocktail Hour, a conversation between adults about sex-forward relationships, kinky lifestyles, and frank communication. If you're under 18, please stop listening and visit scarletteen.com. Hi, this is Lady Petra.
I'm Safa Master.
And this is Kinky Cocktail Hour.
Cheers.
Cheers.
So what are we drinking today?
Well, we had yesterday that Monte Carlo that had the Benedictine Dom in
it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We'd never had that before. So we decided to try the Benedictine Dom straight, neat, today. Mm. It's a liqueur. So one of the interesting things is originally, like we've mentioned, this was in was recipe was made by the Benedictine monks.
Right.
And then got lost at some point and then was recreated in the early 19th century. And supposedly the monks had this around before the French Revolution, and then it kind of fell off, and then it came back, kind of thing. But the interesting thing about the ingredients in this thing is it's got 27 herbs and spices, okay, and 21 of those are the only publicly known one. The remaining six are only known by three people on Earth.
Wow.
That's how closely guarded. But I just want to let you know what's in here. Angelica, hyssop, juniper, myrrh, saffron, mace, fir cones, aloe, arnica, lemon balm, tea, thyme, coriander, clove, lemon, vanilla, orange peel, honey, red berry, cinnamon, and nutmeg.
Incredible.
And six others that we don't know what they are.
Amazing.
So the nose on this is pretty pungent.
It is, but it's like interesting. It's like not quite floral.
No, I mean, there's so
many. It's not really medicinal either.
No, there's just so many. I smell lemon and
I smell different things with different sniffs.
Yeah. I wonder if I'm going to swirl it and see.
It's got fabulous legs.
Oh, yeah. Really good legs. So when you swirl it, everything mingles.
Yeah.
I don't know how to place that. So I'm going to try it.
It's got a really beautiful color. It almost reminds me of a dessert wine in its color.
Wow. Yeah, the viscosity of it is like a ice wine.
Yeah.
That's what I'm... Okay, so that's the first sensation I got with my tongue was like, wow, that's...
Very thick.
Very syrupy, like an ice wine would be. But the flavor, how do I place that? I'm getting multitudes of levels.
I think that's the point.
I guess, and I think that's why it made that Monte Carlo so good.
Yeah. Definitely got some floral notes. Definitely has...
Yeah, because I feel like I'm chewing on flour.
Yeah. Definitely has a bite because it's alcoholic. You know, you sort of get that liqueur, you know, potency.
Well, and I have that warmness down my throat.
It's very much front of the palate.
Yes.
With a long finish.
Very sweet.
Very sweet, yeah.
It's like first sweet, then the front of the palate with all the flavors.
Yeah.
But what I do notice is there's a lot of flavors going on there, so it's hard for me to discern. But they aren't fighting.
No.
They're working.
It's very much balanced, yeah.
Talk about a complex liqueur. This is a freaking complex. And, you know, and the color, it's like 24-karat gold.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it's that yellow.
Yeah, it's got a lot of It's got a lot of characteristics of a dessert
wine.
It's like
a honey wine almost.
It's like a honey wine, yeah. But way more flavorful.
Yeah.
Like wine's got sort
like
of one note.
Like a honey wine is sweet. You notice it's sweet. And the honey wine doesn't always have this viscosity.
I know, but even a honey wine would have like one note.
Yeah.
This has like 900 notes. It's crazy.
I'm getting all kinds of flavors.
I'm really excited to explore this liqueur in different blends.
In different cocktails.
Different cocktails. Because it really dramatically impacted the rye whiskey in the Monte Carlo.
Yeah, I wanna look up recipes and see what happens to this liqueur in a warm drink.
Yeah.
If it changes, right?
Yeah.
It does, you know, it's so thick. We had talked about this before. We don't know if the Monte Carlo got better because we added the ice was melting and the water smoothed it. But there's also rye whiskey in there and bitters. There's other things going on.
Sure.
I don't know if adding, because this is so thick, adding water would change it, would open it.
Don't know.
Wow.
Yeah. Fascinating. Well, I'm excited just to explore this.
Yeah, me too.
This is Sasa Master. My pronouns are he, him, his.
This is Lady Petra, and my pronouns are she, her, hers.
And I'm excited today because we have a great guest on the podcast. We have Lexi from the West Midlands in the UK, who is a fetish queen, I would say. Latex queen, plays in fetishes, professional dominatrix, and so on. So, Lexi, why don't you tell us about what you're up to and you know, how we can get to know you.
Sure. I mean, England's still kind of in lockdown at the moment, so I've kind of just dialed back on the dominatrix side. But hopefully the dungeons will soon be opening and I'll be able to take sessions again. My specialism's in things like latex, bondage, corporal punishment play. I'm quite a strict mistress because I can take a hell of a beating, so anyone who can't take the same level of beating as me is going to get telling off. Lots of sensory play, breath play, pony play, which I believe is what we're going to talk about tonight. I'm there's not many kinks I'm not into. There's also other stuff I'm into, but it's maybe not for mixed company. Unless
well, maybe we'll have you back on again and again. So if you look at your experience in pony play, do you put yourself forward as a trainer in pony play, or do you put yourself forward as a pony?
I have been both. So I have been a pony. I'm quite a difficult pony because I am a really experienced actual horse rider.
Yeah.
So so I find it quite difficult to get in the headspace, and I'm likely to be quite a frisky pony. If they don't treat me properly, and if they tie me up the wrong way, the little part of me that has been a riding instructor wants to shout at them for not tying up a horse in a safe manner, which is not great for the headspace. But someone takes me by, you know, a firm rein, and I'm kind of okay.
Yeah.
And then also because of my experience with horse riding and being a dominatrix, I'm an experienced trainer as well, and quite like a pony.
Yeah. So tell us about this kink. This is an interesting kink. You know, you have ponies who are humans playing horses, and you have ponies who identify as ponies.
Yeah, that's it. So I've come across a few people who are actual, you know, ponies. And so they're very serious about it, and it's slightly different to people who are playing at being a, you know, at pony play. They sort of really get into it. Some of them have some extremely elaborate costumes. So like the full horse masks, it crosses over with latex quite a lot. I've seen quite a lot of latex ponies, you know, the full cat suit, zebra stripes, horse boots, which I might add are difficult to walk in and need some practice, like a ballet boot, a bit of practice on that. Can't just get straight into it. And yeah, tails, the whole lot. Yeah. But it's certainly quite a fun fetish if you are getting into fetishes. And for the doms out there, there's lots of girls who are quite happy to be somebody's pony. Likewise, as a dominatrix, it's rather fun to jump on someone's back and shout yee-haw.
Yeah.
obviously.
Yeah. Is the equipment expensive? It seems like it would be.
Proper horse riding equipment is really expensive. If you want to go get yourself a pair, like if you are a dominatrix or a master and you want to buy yourself proper horse riding gear to get the look, that's going to cost you some money. However, you can appropriate the look. Yeah. So if you wanted, if you get a good footing jacket or blazer, either in a tweed or a black or a navy, even a red, like a British hunting jacket, you can probably pick up one of those from the high street for not too much money. And certainly equestrian comes into fashion on a regular basis, so just keep an eye out for it. You can get a pair of rubber riding boots from Amazon or eBay, probably for around about, probably be about $30. So again, not massively expensive. If you want a pair of proper leather riding boots, however, like I have my pair here.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
These are sort of £150, so I guess that would be like $120.
Yeah,
but they're the around, properly riding in, so they're a sports piece of equipment.
Yeah.
But if you want the details, they're there. Yeah. A pair of riding breeches. Again, you could just wear a pair of white leggings or cream leggings if you don't want to spend the money. If you do want to spend the money, for some reason, I think equipment's just cheaper in the UK. My riding breeches are around about £40, but I think in the States it might cost you £100 plus.
Oh, interesting.
$100 plus. But you can get it secondhand. You can be like me and have a latex outfit, which will cost you considerably more than that.
Yeah.
But you don't necessarily need to spend lots of money on your kink. And actually, then, if you've been a pony, a pair of little ears or a headband, those aren't going to cost you a huge amount of money. And one of my favourite things is a ponytail butt plug.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, again, you can get those off Amazon, or Amazon has some amazing things on it, actually, or eBay, and then they won't cost you a huge amount, or go to a kink shop. And it certainly makes you feel swishy, and you can have colors to match your hair, or you could have rainbow colors. So if you want to be a My Little Pony, which, let's face it, lots of littles do, then you can go with that. And someone who's into something like kitten play might be willing to sort of transition into a pony. And it's a nice thing to do as a sub, because you can be led around, someone will groom you and pet you. That's generally how it works, and tell you how to do, since horses are, I wouldn't say subservient necessarily as an animal, but they do like to follow a leader. So there's a natural payoff.
Yeah. Is there structure to training a pony?
Yes, there can be. It depends on what kind of level you want to take it to. Certainly someone who's more serious about it, then I would be looking at so starting them off with things like ground training, the same way you would with a normal horse. So you might put, like, I've got a bit here. So you might start with putting a bit in their mouth, and quite, for a lot of ponies, this is kind of the starting point, because immediately you're making them non-vocal.
Right.
And since horses are non-vocal animals, they communicate with their body language. It can put people in the right headspace before you even start. And I've actually got actual horse reins attached to these.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So, and it's got a head, proper head harness, so it goes on like a proper bit, and then I can lead my pony around by the mouth, quite literally.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So let's see.
You can tie them up. You might tell them to pick their feet up and inspect their feet the same way you would with a real horse. Mm-hmm. One of the things you do is put them on a long rope and make them trot around. You can use riding crops on them to encourage them.
Yeah.
I've seen, I haven't had a go at it yet, but I intend to, which is when you put a pony in a trap, in like a little carriage, and then they have to pull you around. So that's lots of fun.
Yeah.
So Lexi, with ponies, I'm assuming ponies are various forms of submissive. And if you're going to be entering into a dynamic or a play partner session that requires a trainer and a pony, are there negotiations beforehand? Because they're taking on the persona of an animal, and so there's no verbal. And that, you know, how is that handled between dominant and submissive?
Yeah, so always the key ingredient is going to be consent. So certainly all of my sessions, I would have a conversation with people about what their fantasies are. I quite like to drill down into where the fantasies are coming from a little bit. I find it important to know whether someone is into humiliation, whether, because with something like pony play, it might just be they want the complete release of being an animal. But then you might have the crossover between they want the pain of being sort of punished. It might be actually that they want you to be gentle with them and train them and bring them on. And they're going to be a spooky pony that needs to be sort of guided. So you'd want to find that out beforehand. Also, you're looking at things like physical fitness. So if you're going to strap someone into a trap, and make them pull you around, they need to be physically fit. You don't want people dropping down with a heart attack in front of you. So it's really important to be. It's also things like once you get into to more serious pony play, things like the pony boots, that sort of thing, that requires a certain amount of sort of like limberness and physical fitness. Again, practice with high heels.
Right.
I'm sure any man who says that they can just jump into a pair of high heels will soon explain that you actually do need a bit of practice. Yeah, exactly, well, guys. You don't know how hard it is to walk around in these 6-inch heels.
Yeah.
Apart from the drag queens, obviously, they have got it down.
Yeah.
Well, and I wanted to know, because like as you're bringing in a let's just say a traditional dominant submissive dynamic, there's negotiation, like you said, and then there's things they like and they don't like. Does that also fall into it in the sense, like, I can only imagine, like you said, there's ponies that want to be, I don't know, disciplined like a wild horse. And then there might be ponies that really all they want is the grooming. I mean,
yeah,
do you find it. That where all you're doing with that pony maybe is grooming because that's their thing?
Yeah, that's it. Ultimately, okay. If you're being a dominatrix, then you are in control. But ultimately, you are fulfilling fantasies.
Yes.
So you kind of fulfill a brief. You might expand upon the brief, but you'll be working towards things that you know that they enjoy, things that they've indicated they're interested in exploring. Generally speaking, you'll want to do most of the session with stuff that they're very comfortable with, and maybe one element that's new or they haven't tried or they're less comfortable with. And that's the sort of like extra spice to it. But again, you're keeping away from things that you know that they definitely don't like. So that's where you generally have your sort of list of your sort of hard limits where you'd have a chat with people. It's very difficult though, because sometimes people's hard limits can change. There's certainly things that, and the other way as well, there's certainly things that I would have called a hard limit 4 years ago for me personally. And now I do them with I'm absolutely blasé about it.
Right.
It's my impression that pony play doesn't always involve sex, right? It's very often not a sexual encounter.
No, quite often not. I always think that's quite interesting, and I think it's a little bit the difference between, not always, but it does seem to be more often, the difference between the male-female dynamic where you have a dominatrix, it's all about not having sex at all.
Right.
You know, those bits don't get touched, I'm afraid, apart from maybe bottom holes. And quite a lot of the time, actually, a lot of our slaves are in chastity, and they stay that way, thank you.
Yeah.
Whereas, as a female submissive, it's more about being used. I think, again, that's that flipping of the power dynamic.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, persona has been a pony is just about them being, literally being a pony and being treated like a pony. And I think it's about that release, the same way that puppy and kitten play have it, where it's about being an animal, it's about not being human. And but in the same way being a horse or a pony, you're useful, you're subservient, but you're still a powerful, beautiful creature.
Yeah.
You're never really, you might be firm with your ponies, but you don't really degrade ponies.
Right.
Same way if you were doing puppy play, you're probably more likely to degrade a puppy.
Sure.
Yeah. Especially if they're male.
It also occurs to me that a lot of pony play occurs in public, like you have sort of public gatherings of ponies. Is that accurate?
Yeah, they're show ponies.
Yeah.
Again,
think about that a little bit.
Again, I think it's that idea. I think there's a little bit of an element of being out of yourself. Like they are taking on this persona of being a horse, and that might be a beautiful prancy show horse, or you know, like a thoroughbred. A lot of them, if you ask them, will have a horse breed in mind, and it's never normally like, it's never going to be a sort of pug ugly horse, it's always going to be something like that, you know, like an Arabian or Frisian. So you know, they're imagining themselves with beautiful flowing manes and muscle, and if you've ever watched horses move, they've just got this, especially sort of like the racehorses, beautiful fluid movement. So a lot of it's just kind of showing off, but because they're not themselves, they're the horse, and they quite often have their own horse name. And as a dominatrix, quite often, if they haven't got a name in mind for being a horse, we would give them that horse name.
Right.
So there's someone, there's something different. They're a different entity. They're no longer human. They are a horse.
Yeah. I totally get that.
I've read about veterinarian play associated with pony play.
Yes. So that's when we cross over a little bit with the medical play.
Yeah.
So again, well, you know, stallions have to be milked. So quite often with it, when I've been a pony, you get inspected and, you know, they get the gloves on and they give you an inspection. The same way you would have a gynecological medical fetish inspection. It works very much the same sort of way. And the other things you might do is you might, again, put them through sort of physical tests. You might put them over some jumps, make them walk around, make them run, make them back up, and generally sort of like force them to move around the same way you might a horse when you're testing whether they're sound or lame. But again, it's that crossover from like a sort of medical play element. So quite those two quite often cross over quite nicely.
Yeah.
So we had an interview yesterday of a pony trainer who's new. And his quandary was he's gay. And so what he's finding is where he's located, basically the pond is small already for pony players. Okay. And now it's really small because he's looking for, because I believe he wants to incorporate sex into his pony play. So getting a gay pony play population. And so you're in it, you've been doing it. So like, is that a real special niche and it just doesn't come up as often as typical, we see female ponies, male stallion ponies kind of thing, but they tend to be this either just pure play or, you know, vanilla-ish kind of, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think quite often the pony play is desexualized. I wonder whether it's because people don't want to cross, even though it's not, people don't want to always cross the bestiality line.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think of that.
But you don't have the same thing with kitten play and puppy play.
Exactly.
I think pony play weirdly has a tendency of being... The male ponies I've met have a tendency of being heterosexual. This is not always, this is a real generalization, but the ones that I've met so far have been heterosexual. That could just be, just happens to be the ones I've met. Whereas you get a lot more puppies who are, you know,
bi or gay or that kind of,
That seems, puppy play seems really common in with gay guys. And maybe slightly less so with heterosexual guys. So
that's an interesting, because he said the same thing. He said it's generally just like you described, and it's very difficult. Like he's having to introduce people to it, which I encouraged him to do. But I'm sure there's people out there, they just don't even know they like it yet.
Well, that's it. It's quite often the nice thing about kinks is that you can introduce people to things like there's a lot of girls who I know who are into latex, and most of us, myself included, have got into latex through a partner who's into it, because as girls we just don't have the access to porn, and or we do but we just don't get into it. So and I think we're not visually
after
that imagery the same way that men are.
But I like the feel of it and I like the sound of it. And you feel sexy when you put it on, you know, so all those elements are there, but you're right. I mean, I like the end product look when I look across and see someone in latex. I like that, but it's the whole process that makes it so enticing.
Exactly.
And it's super expensive.
It's a lot better to wear. It's so much effort to wear in a good way.
But, exactly.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of interesting where different kink come from. And like I've got a play partner who's really into, we talk about this brown stuff, and
he says
so, and he can't find female partners, or it's very rare to find female partners who are into it, so he will play with guys because of that,
to get that need.
Interesting. And so and you know, he's very open and flexible, as lots of people who wouldn't be. So I think kind of with the ponies, he's just gonna have to introduce people to it, but I'm sure that out there, it's just like with me with latex and stuff, my plate partners are based all over the world. I'm quite happy to travel. So, and the more specific your kinks get, the people will be out there, and the internet is fantastic in that you can find these people who've got the same kinks and interests as you. FetLife is brilliant for that, but it might just mean you have to travel.
Yes, yeah, I agree. Exactly. I agree.
Do you have a great resource for latex? I mean, you're into latex in a big way, but is there a great American resource for latex that you're aware of?
America seems to be particularly expensive when it comes to latex.
Really?
you've got some great, you do have some really great makers over there. You haven't
would
got
you them. Would you say buy latex from England and just import it?
No, or? No, certainly there's some really good American makers, but my advice is, the thing is, I am very pro latex, and actually I'm coming out to the States soonish, and so our plans are to start arranging more latex events, because you don't seem to have them quite as much as we do in the UK. You did have a torture garden in New York fairly recent, well, before lockdown, and you've got a latex party in Texas. I imagine some of the states aren't ideal for latex because they're a wee bit on the warm side, but certainly when you've got windy, we have the same problem when it's hot in here. Latex is no fun. Europe has a better latex scene. I think it's a cultural thing. We just, like, you go to Germany and it's just the standard. They just, you can, I've worn catsuits in full hood in the middle of Berlin and no one cared. No one cared. I had a mum with her child come and ask me for a photo.
That's nice.
But it is Berlin, yeah.
You have to love Berlin. Berlin really is the capital of kink, and it lives up to that reputation. Yeah. Really, really does. And if you are into kink and into parties, the German Fetish Ball is Mecca, basically.
Wow. I
recommend it for anybody who is into kink and wants to have that sort of big, big party vibe and just meet some wonderful people. A lot of Americans there as well, funnily enough.
Sure.
Latex wise, my suggestion is either you need a big budget or eBay is a wonderful resource. So again, you can get stuff that's secondhand that's not quite so expensive. I would stay away from the Chinese stuff myself. I bought a catsuit from Latex Catfish and I wasn't that impressed with it. It is cheap, but I just, the smell of it, and it just wasn't as good.
So are you having to get them sized? Because I've seen all different vendors where they actually take all your sizes to get them cut and built for you. And those
you
are
can,
like
and that's certainly
expensive.
A good idea with a catsuit. but it will cost you more money. So something like the gold standard of cat suits is Fantastic Rubber. They're a German brand. They measure everything, and also they give you a lifetime guarantee, but you are spending $400 on a cat suit. And bearing in mind latex rips, it's very, very easy to rip it, but they will replace whatever bit is broken on it for you.
Will you share with how you, when you get it on, there definitely is a procedure to get a full cat suit on, because if it's fitted to you, what are you lubing your body to put it on, or what's happening?
So it's two different methods. You either use a silicone lube, but you get a special one from a special like latex one to make sure you can't
it
just use any.
It down.
You can't just use like sex lube. It wouldn't work. It has to be a silicone based one.
Okay.
So you'd use that fairly liberally, particularly over areas where it's likely to stick, like your bottom shoulders. I like to put some around the wrist, and then you slide the cat suit on. It involves quite a lot of wiggling. And then you get someone to help you with your zip, or you have to be a bit bendy. Some of them don't have zips, some of them are neck entry, in which case it kind of sloops up your body.
See, and I don't have a cat suit, but I have a latex, I don't know, I think it's latex or rubber, but spanking skirt, right? And, you know, even that is hard to get into. So what I did is I do have silicone lube. So I would put it on my hips to get it up to the hips.
Yeah.
So you can zip it, basically. And then I would pull it down to my knees because it was like a pencil skirt.
Yeah, that's the best idea with those. That's what I do with my pencil.
I'm just
skirt.
Fascinated by latex. And when I wear it, you know, you get all the sensations, the heat, the way your fingers go across the latex, it changes your sensations. It's all, and then of course, I think it's erotic when you take it off and you're just
sweaty. So sweaty. I know what you mean though. And I think one of the nice things about it is, like, I've got things like translucent latex as well. So it means you can go out and you're entirely covered, but you're also entirely revealed at the same time, which is for me quite a nice feeling.
So that's awesome. I love those. Yeah. I've seen those. They're so beautiful. And truly the designs that I see are just phenomenally made. I mean, just gorgeous.
Yeah, I mean, most of my cat suits are Rubber Eva, which is a brand I would definitely recommend. They're not, they're like mid-price for cat suit type things. and they're a French brand. It was Robert Eva, actually, the fetish actress. She does a lot of very kinky outfits, but I love her cat suits I've got reasonably sized boobs, so they shape cups for those, because a lot of cat suits,
that's great.
Like a lot of fashion stuff, doesn't believe that girls have curves.
Yes. So do you have to build up time in a full latex suit? I'm just thinking, because there's things like, I don't know, would you dehydrate if you wore it too long?
You can dehydrate. I'd certainly recommend, I mean, I've been to big events for like hours on end, gone out. I've worn a cat suit all day before.
Sure.
You do need to drink lots of water. Water is important. I would never recommend getting a cat suit that doesn't have a crotch zip for that reason.
That's the next question. How do you go to the bathroom?
Yes, crotch zip. Crotch zips are very important. You need those. Just keep hydrated. I have overheated once, and that's when I was in Berlin on a photo shoot, and that's because I was wearing double layers. I was wearing two lots of cat suits, two lots of hoods. I was the first person to get ready. All the other girls were taking their good sweet time. And then we did the shoot. It was absolutely boiling. And then we did lots of walking around outside with more shooting. And my Danish friend, who's a photographer called The Tribe, he pushed me in the nearest shower, which was very lucky because I was about to keel over.
Yeah.
So you're wearing double suits. You could take one off to be in another outfit. Was that the idea?
No, it was about having, so I had a dark cat suit underneath and then a lighter cat suit, like a light transparent cat suit on the top. So it was about the visual effect of having the two latexes on top of each other.
I see.
Oh, neat. That's really neat. Cool.
Yeah, it's very warm.
It's fascinating. Yeah, very warm.
Yeah.
But yeah, the thing is you've got, I'm just trying to think of the American brands. Can't remember them offhand. There are some really good American latex makers. I think there's one called Lindion, which is in Michigan, and they make some really cool fishnet latex, which I'm going to buy as soon as I can afford it. Failing that, like I said, keep an eye out on the UK sites. Like Libidex is a fantastic resource. If you're ever in London, go along to the Liberate store. Not only has it got tons of kinky stuff, the people there are very knowledgeable, really, really fun, lovely people, and you can try the latex on yourself to work out what size you're going to be. And also they've got an online shop, they have regular sales.
I'm going to definitely hit you up for a bunch of resources so I can post it with this pod for listeners.
Yeah, you should.
It's one of those things, you have to be in latex currently and knowing who to go to and who to buy from, and you've kind of trialed and erred already, and use that information to kind of direct people in the right way. And of course, I'm very interested in latex, so I'm going to dive right in.
Etsy's worth a look as well.
It seems like
pieces on Etsy.
It
seems like the gas mask breath play aspect of latex is sort of part of that world.
So
talk a little bit about that experience, you know, like breathing through a water bath, and you know, just like having restricted breath. And
it's one of my personal primary fetishes, both doing it myself and also to other people. It is, I think the first disclaimer on that one is play safe. Any breath play is ultimately not the safest thing to do. So my first, what most DOMs would generally say is don't do it, because it's always a risk. But if you are going to do it, then do it safely. So the first thing you can do is just put a gas mask on. That would be my piece. It's easy, it's fun, a little bit claustrophobic. It also dehumanizes you. When you look in a mirror, you've not got a human face anymore.
Yeah.
So both as a DOM, or as a DOM, it's fun to wear because then you can intimidate, because again, they can't see your eyes. It's a little bit scary. And likewise, if they're wearing a gas mask for the first time, it can feel a bit claustrophobic. But likewise, it can be an extremely safe space. For me, I find it quite relaxing. And then if you're doing breath play, one of the safest ways to do it then is to hold your breath as the DOM. So hold your breath and then put your hand over the inlet so they can't breathe in. The reason why you are holding your breath is that you're going to need to let it go. You should never hold their breath any longer than you can do it.
Good point.
Oh, I love that. I love that tip. I'm serious. That's like tip. the That's like the best tip I've heard.
That's a world-class tip right there.
Yeah, it really is. Because it's honoring the play in a safe way.
Yeah, exactly. And again, the simplest way of doing breath play really is just to pinch their nose and put your hand over their mouth. You could do it with, if you've got latex, you could do it with a piece of latex. But again, the same trick applies. You hold your breath and then don't hold it for any longer, because then it's a nice, easy way of making sure that you're not going to overdo it. But again, you've got to watch what they're doing. If they are struggling, if you have any feeling that it's not right, it's always better to do less than to do more in these situations.
Yeah.
The next thing on from that is to put a hose on. You might put a slightly longer hose on, which again makes it harder to breathe because you're having to draw get that air through.
Yeah.
Again, a really top tip on that one is do not leave things like hoses on, like long hoses on, for too long, because you can get a carbon dioxide buildup.
Sure.
So again, okay, you need to be taking it off fairly regularly so that they can get some clean air in every so often.
Yeah.
Bubble bottle is really fun as well. So it's like a bottle. Which I can show you another time, which you put water in, or depending what you want, and poppers. Highly recommend that, especially if you are going to do some strap-on play.
Yeah,
it's quite an intense experience if you've got poppers in, for my piece of advice on that one.
What are poppers?
Poppers. So it's amyl nitrate.
Oh, okay.
So.
Ampules, like for when someone passes out.
Not really. It's a vasodilator. It's been around a long time. It's okay. Really big on, like, there's not many gay men who won't be able to tell you what it is.
Okay.
So again, you can buy it online. It's quite often sold as a record cleaner. and what it is it's essentially a legal high, but it's not something that gets you, it's not something that kills off brain cells. It's mm-hmm. It's very harmless, basically, but it gives you a bit of a head rush, and it also causes sort of vasodilation,
mm-hmm.
which it's relaxing. So if people are if you're going to do strap-on play or bum play for the first time, I would highly recommend it for, and like I said, that's why it's big on the gay scene.
Gotcha.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
But for people into breath play, they're quite often into poppers as well.
So if people are into breath play, because I'm curious about it. So just briefly, I'm an athlete and I was an ex-swimmer. And I used to play before mm-hmm. I knew I had a kink in the water, and would often hold my breath while I'm working out. Like mm-hmm. often, for long periods of time. And, you know, you'd get a little high, a buzz from that while you're working yeah. out and things like that. So I don't know where to go with that, in the sense of, we've played a little bit with choking and I like that because it does restrict my airflow and it mm-hmm. gives me that sensation. It's never to a point where I'm worried about it, but I don't know.
Okay, well, here's some hot things you can do without equipment. Like I said, just putting a hand and pinching the nose mm-hmm. while you're looking into someone's eyes can be really, really hot, especially if they're sort yeah. of on top of you. That's quite yeah. intense. And again, by looking into the eyes, you're seeing what the effect is. Okay. And then the easy way to get out of it is just most subs, if they give a little bit of a head shake, that's, you know, mm-hmm. it's time to back off.
Okay.
Another thing you can do is to pinch their nose and put your mouth over theirs in sort of like a super deep kiss that
oh, yeah.
doesn't let any air in. And that's also extremely hot.
Mm-hmm.
And really, again, it's that real sort of intensity. And again, you've got that thing where if you're holding your breath, they're holding their breath, it's quite safe.
Okay.
Moving up from that, again, gas masks or the anesthetic mask, if you don't want like the whole facing, it's worth having a go with.
Mm-hmm.
So my suggestion again is either the easiest thing to do is hand over that, or hand over the tube. Also, the thing you could do with the tube is you can put it on a nipple, you can put it on a body. They're wearing latex, again, it's quite a good seal.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can put a little bit of tape over the hose itself. So you're making it a little bit harder to breathe.
Right. Okay, got it. Yeah, got it.
We've got yeah. rebreather bags, which again are made out of latex. I personally don't like leaving there's like a rubber bung at the end. I get those out.
Mm-hmm.
And it then means it restricts your breathing because you're rebreathing carbon dioxide. So you get that sort of high.
Yeah.
And then as a dominatrix, you can pinch the hole, which then means that they're using it more. Yeah, that feeling where, you know, like when you're underwater and you're
right. yes. using that
air, it's exactly the same feeling. And then once they get to a certain point, like begin to get like quick breathing, uncomfortable with it, that's when you take it off.
So it definitely sounds like you're looking for body signals and or agreements ahead of time, like I'm going to raise my hand or drop the handkerchief or something that allows people to know where you're at in your breath play.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I would be failing if they're getting to the point where they're having to sort of red out or or drop the handkerchief. I'd want to be finishing it well before they're at that point. Quite a lot of the time, if they're new to breath play as well, I will not incorporate bondage with it as well. The only bondage I'll have would be my body on top of theirs. I won't tie them up so that if they need to if they feel that panic and need to get their hands up there, then they can.
Okay, okay. Awesome.
Gosh, Lexi, you've been like a fountain of information.
I know. It's so
I really appreciate you taking time to spend with us today. And hopefully we can catch up with you in the future for something more interesting or differently interesting in the world of kink. Thanks a lot for coming on. And,
well, thank you for having me.
That's it for today. You can find us on your favorite podcast directory. We also have an RSS feed. If you're interested in online coaching for kinksters or online domination, you can visit our Patreon website at Lady Petra Playground. And if you're having comments or suggestions or drink ideas for our podcast, you can email me at ladypetraplayground@gmail.com.
That's it.
That's it.
Cheers.
Cheers.